katzer today, it's a tiny, so we'll try to cut everything down. Everything down into smaller sizes in honor of Gedalia. Okay, so let's start with what we're up to. Okay, we'll talk about Gedalia a little bit later on. Gedalia ben Achikam. Okay, it's a terrible tragedy that happened today. I find that Tzom Gedalia is one of the hardest days of the year, if not the hardest day, harder than Tisha B'Av. After Rosh Hashanah, 2 days Rosh Hashanah, with everything that the build-up leading to Rosh Hashanah, with preparation, food preparation, davening preparation, doing tshuva, the whole social scene, the shock on the system, is a shock on a person's system, both physically and mentally, in so many ways. And then if you finally zoichet to make it to Mitzvah Rosh Hashanah, and then what? Tomorrow is a fast day? You got to be joking. You got to be kidding. And always, every year, you come to davening the day after, on Tzom Gedalia Shacharis, and you look at the people, they're in shell shock. Every year, that same, it's very, very hard. It's a very, very hard day to go from Rosh Hashanah. I'm not talking about the spiritual high. I'm just talking about the you need to breathe. The build-up, the emotional, the psychological, the physical build-up, the change, and you made it. You made it, and now the next day, wow, you got to get back to work. It's not easy to get through a fast day. It's not all easy in every way. But anyway, Baruch Hashem, we're here to learn Torah, so we'll do a little bit today. Let's start where we're up. We have just a few little things to finish off in these last 3 psukim. We did almost everything. I'm just going to do the Malbim. Malbim is very short, and there's a very interesting rid, Taisvis rid, and then my Mari Chazal, and then we'll see if we have time, we'll go into the next Perek, the end of Perek Dalet, the very end of Perek Dalet, which is on page... What page? 492. So we learned this last week. We spent a few days on this. We went through the Rashi's we spent time on. And I don't know if we did the Malbums. The Malbums, I don't think we did entirely. Let's run through it very quickly. They're not so hard. Let's start from Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, let's start from Pasuk Yud Gimel. In the Ma'imel, that's a good place to start from. On page 493, Kumi Vadoishi Basiyim. Okay, so here Hashem is giving instructions to Klal Yisrael, so they should participate in destroying the enemy, their enemies. Okay, Mitzayah, you notice a lot of the Simonim, I couldn't help but notice the Simonim and Rosh Hashanah, most of them are about destroying our enemies. I didn't know we had so many enemies. So many different expressions. All different types of expressions to destroy your enemy. Kumi, rise up. Vadoishi Basiyan. Hashem is giving a command to Basiyan. They should get up and they should participate in destroying the enemy. Mitzayer Zman Milchemes Gaygu Magog. Over here, the Pasuk is describing the war of the times of Mashiach. Hashem is going to gather all the nations around Yerushalayim, like a person gathers mites into the threshing floor, in order to remove the mites, to remove the chaff min habar from the kernel. Umitzaveh el basiyan shetakum v'sadush ke'egla dasha. Hashem is commanding basiyan klal yishol to get up and to take an active role in destroying the enemy. Ki karnech asim barzel. Your horn is made from iron. Li lochim bikeren ulnageach el es hamoin gog, in order to go to war against the nation of Gog. Notice over here you have a horn. We're going through Rosh Hashanah, is that the strength of a nation is always a metaphor is described as karnei barzel, and yet when we go before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, it's the horn of a ram, of an animal. as if to say we recognize our strength does not come from Karnei Barzel, weapons, airplanes, tanks, missiles, technology. The Koyach of Klal Yisrael comes from a horn of an animal that represents Avraham and Yitzchak, our Avos. That's the strength, that's the Karen. It's not just Hashem. It's not just that in order to remember the Akedah, so we figured out, we took the horn of an animal, we blow the sound. You have to appreciate that the Karen is the contrast. It stands in diametric contrast to what is considered the pride and joy of a nation. Modern nations, on the day of their anniversary, their Independence Day, they have parades, military parades. And at the military parades, what do they display? They display their weapons. They display their tanks, their missiles, their airplanes, their technology. This is our koichi v'oitzem yadi os liachayel hazeh. Klal Yisrael, on the day when we express our koyach, we don't use karnei barzel. We use the karen of the ayil, v'hine ayil, achar nechaz basvach b'karnof, which represents Yirah Shemayim. Ato yodati ki yirei Elohim ato. V'lechasachtas binchas yichitcha mimeni. The Iker Karen, the strength of Klal Yisrael, is the Yirah Shemayim. Next, ufar sosaych osim nechusha, your hooves I will set copper. L'inyin hadisha liver hadogim namoitz vadikois amim rabim. You're going to have hooves of copper and you're going to crush nations. L'chasir haklipa haynu l'chales harishon, to destroy the enemy. Ad she yishoer kemach naki, until it's pure flour. V'hacharamti l'ashem bitzam. And then it says, here we had this discussion, what is the translation of the word v'hacharamti? Habetza v'hechomos shalachum yishol yichirem v'hekdesh l'ashem. Ki kodesh yishol l'ashem. It's going to be dedicated to Hashem. It's going to be dedicated to Hashem. We had a long discussion about the meaning of the cherim. Umemoinam kimamon hegdish. V'gam chelam shel atzmam she'enem al yidei betza miYisrael. V'enay cherim mikol makam yil Hashem. Everything will be dedicated to Hashem. Mitzachu adoin kol aretz v'akol shaloi. Everything will be dedicated to Hashem, because they'll now come to recognize that Hashem is the master. Pasuk Gidal Ata now, Mefarish mihem umas sheyisasvu oz al Yerushalayim asher Yisrael yadu shoysam. Now Pasuk Gidal is coming to tell us to identify the nations. Who are they? Oimer sheyagidur hazayit sheyavu al Yerushalayim b'achus hayam miyu ba'anbonim shel umas sheytsaru al Yerushalayim v'hechrivu yisrael b'mekeden. It's going to be the descendants of our enemies from the previous generations. Kimoy b'nei Ashur, u'b'nei Bavel, u'b'nei Roime. Three nations he gives: Ashur, Bavel, and Rome. Notice he leaves out, and behold, right, which Malchus is he leaving out? Yavon. So why does the Malbum and Paras? Well, Paras, we can answer. Not it's not a great answer, but Paras is.
They're not at war with
them. Oh wait, no, you're right. We're including Bavel. You're right. Bavel is not. What do we include? Ashur. Right. You're right. Because Ashur is not from Dal Malchias. Correct. So we're leaving out Paras and Mordai, and we're leaving out Yavon. Okay. So very interesting. The descendants of these nations. Uvezel Shamar Shatonatis Goididi Hagedut. So he's translated with Goididi, mean an army. We have different translations. The Gedut Sheyiskoided Ata B'Mulchemes Goyigia Bas will be the daughter shel gidud asher motzor som olein b'meikedem. A new translation of this pasuk. This is beautiful how he translates the pasuk. Something we did not see before is he takes with bas literally. No one, very rarely in these types of psukim, when you have the word bas, is the word bas to be taken literally. Bas means, it's like you say, the Baal Korea, the Baal Tokea. Okay, it's a title. Okay, yeah. It's a title. The Baal Tokea. By the way, the Baal Tokea is a stira. All the people that will correct you very politely, that if you say the Baal Kore, anyone ever correct you? If you say the Baal Kore, So someone will tap you on the back and say, you don't know one, you don't know anything about grammar. There's no such thing as the Baal Kore, it's the Baal Kriya. Okay, the Baal Kriya. Now the problem with that correction is, so what do you do for the Baal Tokea? It should be the Baal Tokea. Exactly. But yet it's very popular to call them the Baal Tokea. Did you ever hear someone call them the Baal Tokea? Never. I never heard someone call them the Baal. You call the Baal Tokea. What's the complaint? Why you're not supposed to say the Baal Koire? The Koire itself means the person who is reading. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, the one that is reading is called the Koire. The Koire automatically means the one who is reading. So to say Baal, the reader. So to say Baal Koire is redundant. It's superfluous, it's redundant. So that's why the people who are medactic on grammar will tell you, do not say Baal Koire.
Baal means a master of a certain skill.
And the Koire means the reader. It automatically means he is the master of the reading. So it's redundant. Therefore, they will tell you that it's correct to say the Baal Kriya, the master of the reading, not the master of the reader. I've heard this, and I grew up many times, you know, in Israel. There were some very people that are very into this, and they thrived on correcting these innocent little yeshiva boys who don't know the first thing, how to read Aleph Beis.
A lot of people there who know their stuff.
Okay, so the problem with that is, I got a little bit older, and I checked into this, and I asked Taka, someone Taka knows this stuff really inside out. He right away said to me, he laughed off the whole thing, and he gave me 20 other examples, which I can't remember anything. But he said to me, and what about the Baal Tokea? The Baal Tokea. There's no difference between the Baal Kore and the Baal Tokea. So go back to my people. I should go back to my people and ask them, how do you refer to the one who blows shofar? Do you call him the Baal Tokea, or do you call him the Baal Tekiah? So what's the answer? The answer is that it's an expression. It doesn't mean anything. It's an expression. It's part of the same way it's incorrect to say the Baal Tokea, but that's universally accepted. So too, it's an expression. There's nothing wrong saying the Baal Kriya. Nothing wrong. The Baal Kore. It's not so terrible. You want to be medactic? So then say the Baal Korea, say the Baal Tekiah. The Baal Tekiah, okay. So any event, you have a lot of these examples. Over here now, in Tanakh, we have often the word Bas. Bas is just another way of saying the Baal. Yeah, it means the master. So that's what's very uncommon. That's what the Malbim here is doing for the Malbim doing here. That is in contrast to all of the other commentators. When we read this pasuk, we read Ata now Tiskoididi Bas Gidud Motzar Sam. We have different translations. So either it meant Tiskoididi means cut yourself. You're going to cut yourself Bas Gidud. The one, the word Bas in that translation meant the one who is cut. The one, it's just an expression. The one who is cut up. Tiskoididi Bas Gidud. Cut yourself into pieces, the one who is cut into pieces. Or, if you want to learn the word Tiskoididi means an army, Atanau, Tiskoididi, there will be an assembly of armies, Bas Gidud. It means the same exact thing. The nation, Bas means the nation who has armies. Motzar Samolenu. They have cast, they have set a siege around us. It's very common that the word Bas is just a poetic prefix, almost, as the one who does this thing, the one who assembles armies, the one who represents the army. But the Malbum is doing something very, very unique. And he's telling us Bas is to be translated literally. The daughter, a descendant. Atonau Tiskoididi, gather together, bring your army. You who are the great, 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 great grandchildren of the Gedud, of the one who gathered their army 2,000 years ago, Motzar Samoleinu. Tisgoididi Bas Gedud. You is a term which means you who are descendants of the people who used to do this very often in a much more threatening and in a very horrible way. You now assemble the ones who are the descendants of Motzar Samolein, who in the past have laid siege against us, because now the day of reckoning is here and you are going to pay the price for your ancestors. So you right away ask, it's not fair. Lo yumsu avos al banim, ubanim lo yumsu al avos, and paiked avon avos al banim al b'nei banim shleishim v'ribeim. It doesn't go down more than four generations. And all of this also only applies to Jews. Who says this applies to non-Jews? Right. If you follow, if oiches maseim biyodeim, if you go and you follow in your ancestors' ways, then you are held accountable for the sins of the ancestors. And then we did learn the Sefer Hasidim, who taught us. He spoke about Abaya and Rabba. Is that correct? Rabba, Abaya and Rabba. No. So I don't think Rabba. It was Rabba. I think it was Rabba. And this kind, even the Havaya is the Abaya of Rabba, but in the curse of Eli. Eli was cursed because he did not give Musr to his children. He allowed Chofni Upinchas, read in Haftarah and Rosh Hashanah. Chofni Upinchas, they were corrupt. And because of their corruption, Shiloh was destroyed. And because Eli did not give them Musr, he was cursed. And his descendants were cursed all the way down to the time of Abaya and Rabba. Abaya was only lived 40 years. He died when he was 40 years old. Rabba was 60 years old. They died halfway through their lives in their youth. And Chazal said, why do? Because of the curse of Eli. Hashem, the Navi cursed, Hashem cursed Eli for not giving Musa to his children, Chofni Pinchas, to curb the corruption that was taking place in Mishkan Shiloh. So the Sefer Hasidim asked, it's not fair. The generation of Abaya and Rabba is a lot more than four generations. And the Pasuk says, Lo yumsu avos al banim, banim lo yumsu al avos, poiked avon avos al banim al b'neim, yal shleishim v'yal ribeim. You can't go down more than four generations. It's very, very, it's a Gefarish Gemara. The Gemara says, they died, halach al mais, they died. And you can't go tell me that they died because they were oiches masei avoseim. They were not corrupt. There's no record that Abaya and Rabba was corrupt in any way whatsoever. So why then did he suffer? So this is tzorach in Godol ad Me'oid. But the Sefer Hasidim is very bold to say, the answer is, there are exceptions. When the chait is so great, that's what he writes, I'm making this up. When the chait is so awesome, that's an exception. When the chait is just average, then it does not go down more than four generations. But when, and even that, it has to be oiches maaseim biyodeim. But when the chet is so great, the corruption, what happened in Shiloh, we really, this is lost, there's no question about it, that it's totally lost from us, the Churban Shiloh. We have a Tisha B'Av, we have say, a Tzom Gedalia, and if we're lucky, you know, someone once in a while will spend time delving into the tragedy, what happened in the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, all the Averois and some Gedalia and Asar B'Teves, but do you ever hear people giving a Shiurim trying to explain the chait of Shiloh? What exactly did Chofni Upinchas do that Eli, their father, deserved such a curse that all of his descendants leading down all the way to the time of Abaya and Rabba were cursed and had to die halfway through their lives? And what's going on over there? Obviously, it was something so significant that there's what to learn. There are major lessons in the Kinois. Every so often there's a mention of Shiloh. There's a reference to Shiloh Udon and Nach about if you're not going to behave yourself, it's going to be Shiloh all over again. It's very, very disturbing. Now, that is only true when it comes to Jews. Where do you ever have a principle in the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds the Goyim to the same standards or is going to punish their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren? How does all of this work? Especially when we know the Chazal tells us that Bo Melech Ashur, U Bilbul Kol Umais, Melech Ashur, he mixed up every single nation. And the truth is, there is no such thing in our day and age as an Einikol of anyone today. Because all the nations have basically dissolved and assimilated and integrated. So what then does this mean? But yet the Malbim says the day of Mashiach is going to come, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the great, whatever number of greats you want to add, grandchildren, they're going of the people who did exactly the same thing years ago. The Einikloch of all of the soldiers who laid siege to Yerushalayim in the Churban Bayis Rishon, and the Einikloch of the soldiers who laid siege to the Bayis Sheni, and for that matter, you can probably add all of the descendants of the Nazis and all the descendants of the Kazakhs and the time of the Khmelnytsky massacres and all of the descendants of Ashur who destroyed Goyla the Aseres Hashvatim, and the list goes on and on and on. The whole day we can sit here, we wouldn't even finish the list of the Einikloch of all these people. They are going to be there coming. Hashem is going to inspire them to surround Yerushalayim in order that we can now get up Kumi Vadoishi Basioin, and we can go and we can take revenge against, and we are also we're the Einikloch against what they have done to our ancestors. It's an amazing insight. I mean, to say such a thing as to trace the yichus of who these people are. It's very, very fascinating. On Rosh Hashanah, I was talking to someone. It is not to be believed. This some of the things that I was hearing about. There was a ger, a person married a ger. Okay, and they discovered that the woman who married him has very unique yichus. Very unique. I don't want to go into too many details because it's not my place tonight. A woman married a ger. I know them very well. A Jewish woman married a ger tzedek. This woman who married has very unique yichus. She's not Ashkenazi. I don't want to go into too many details because it's not my place that you should figure out who the person is. Some of you may know who they are. And the husband is not Jewish. I mean, that's clear. Yet, it was later discovered that the husband's mother's family goes all the way back, and it could be later on they're Jewish, to exactly this family. The family from where the mother comes from where this husband, where this person's wife comes from.
One family.
What?
You go far back enough, everyone will
die. This is not so far back. It's only like four or five generations. And it's mind-boggling. It's like, wow. Like, what are the chances something like that would happen? She married a person who was a Ger Tzedek, full-fledged Ger Tzedek, and then later they discovered that the Ger Tzedek's, by the way, the Ger Tzedek, his father was Jewish. The mother was not Jewish, so he's not Jewish because the mother is not Jewish, but the mother's mother, I don't know. He told me the whole yichus. It's just like, what are the chances that this family, like, they're just going back to their roots?
So he was Jewish, you're saying?
No, he wasn't Jewish. No. He wasn't Jewish but yet the blood in the blood. He was not Jewish. There's no question.
No.
They were not. Even if she was, which is very likely. Okay, I don't know all of the details. But even if it turns out that it was Jewish, but there was a break. There's no question about it. There's a break in the middle. But yet, in the blood, there is a direct link to the. You don't even need the DNA. They know all the name. They figured out the whole thing by themselves. They don't need DNA. To the wife's family. It's like, wow, only Hashem can do this. Hashem can orchestrate that that many generations ago, they're coming back together. They're coming back. Like, I'll tell you so my own family. This I could say. My brother is a joke in my family. My brother, when you walk into his humble little home in Lakewood, there's a big picture on top of the door, of my great grandfather, of Aaron Levine, the Rei Sharaf, and of Zalman Sarotsky, the Rav of Lutsk. Okay, Rav Zalman. No, he was one who was mechaber Oznayim Latoira. So very used to be a very, it still is, but it used to be a very popular sefer on Chumash. Oznayim Latoira. He was a very choshev, and his children, the Sarotskins. Rav Baruch Sarotskin was his son. He was Rashiv in Tells. And today there are a lot of Sarotskins all over the place. Wherever you go, look, there's another Sarotskin. They're very successful. They're very powerful people. They are big Rosh Yeshivas and the Askanim, the Sarotskin family. So who's the father of all the Sarotskins? What? Who is the father of all the Sarotskins? Of Zalman Sarotskin. So they have this very beautiful picture of Aaron Levine and of Zalman Sarotskin standing next to each other. Still, and I even know what year it was. This was the third Knessia Gedola. What was the third Knessia Gedola? I forgot the exact dates. This was a picture I found that recently was took place at the third Knessia Gedola. They were standing there together. So, why is that picture there? Because my brother is a great grandchild of Aaron Levine, Ben Achar Ben from Rav Aaron Levine. Rav Aaron Levine. The Mordechai, Aaron, and my brother's name is Nassan. So my brother is a Ben Achar Ben from the Rei Sharaf. His wife is her mother. Her mother is the daughter of Baruch Sarotskin, who was the son of Rav Zalman Sarotskin. So she is a great granddaughter from Rav Zalman Sarotskin. So what better could you have? You have her great grandfather and my great grandfather. There is, so what better picture can you put on the door? But that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. The true story is that at this meeting, at the third Knessia Gedola, when they were together, I don't want to say who in all the details, a shidduch was proposed between the two. My great grandfather had a son. And Rav Zalman had a daughter, and there was discussion to make a shidduch, to be mishadich, and it didn't work out. I know why it didn't work. I didn't even know the whole conversation. Okay, which I'm not going to tell you. There was a conversation that took place, and I find it. We all find the conversation very, very funny. Like, really? And this picture over here in their home is Hashem's sense of humor. You think you can escape your fate? You think there was a shidduch proposed, it really should have happened, and for whatever reason it didn't happen. So it didn't happen then, so it happened now. You can't escape your fate, somehow, some way. And these stories, I'm telling you one teeny little story, and probably every single person here can tell me 20 stories just like this. And you all know it. Stories just like this. And when you read this, it's just the same thing on steroids, in the opinion of the Malbim. The Malbim says, if you would be able to trace every single soldier, and probably their status, what's it called in the army? Their rank. If you would be able to trace every soldier and their rank, you can bet that each one is a descendant of exactly the same type of soldier with the same type of rank going back in some major event in Jewish history where our enemies caused us great harm. And now it's payday. Here they are all over again, in body and soul, and Hashem is telling us, get up, kumi vadoishi, get up and beat the living daylights out of these people for what they've done to you. Who are they? Atanau, tiskoididi. You, nations of the world gather together in an army, Baskidut, you who are the descendants, the Enekloch of the Gidud Motzor Somoleinu, who back in the day laid siege to the Jewish people. That's what the Pasuk says. And it's so true. We all know it's true. It seems like, and the question is, how does all of this work? We have no idea. Suddenly it's beyond us. Why should it be true? What does an Enekel have to do with the grandfather? Yeah? So this very that's this pasuk is a very big challenge, that idea. But this pasuk says it explicitly. We discussed this. We discussed more than once. This is very, very unique. Even especially when it comes to Milchemes Gog u'Magog, we're under the impression that it's going to be totally done by Hashem. But yet it says you cannot ignore the fact that it says over here, Kumi Vodoyishi Basiyin. It's a pasuk, Ki Karnech Osim Barzel, Ufar Sosaich Osim Nechusha. How else can you explain this? You want to struggle, you want to go against the grain and find another interpretation where it means we're going to sit back and do nothing and Hashem's going to do it for us? Maybe, I don't know. But that's not where the most Mepharshim over here learn. They learn that this is simply referring to Milchemes Gog u'Magog. The nations are gathered. Hashem is telling us, we don't know what this means, to take an active role in bringing an end to our enemies. And the Malbim goes so far to say our enemies in time of Milchemes Gog u'Magog are not any new enemies. They're just a reincarnation of our old enemies in body and soul. They're Enekloch. He, the Baruch Hashem, he doesn't go so far to say the Gilgulim. Baruch Hashem. Because that I couldn't handle. That would be too hard to handle. He doesn't say Gilgulim. He doesn't say that. It says Bas. Descendants. Okay, I went to a shmuz every Rosh Hashanah. I couldn't believe what the rabbi said. The rabbi said we're all gulgulim. Are you kidding? You're saying this in front of the tzibah? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But okay, to each his own. None of my business. It doesn't say that in the pasuk. It says bas gidud. Even that's a chiddush. Descendants of the army that in the past have laid siege against us. And now the pasuk goes on to say bas shevet yaku el chi eish shevte yishol shevet yishol. And now the pasuk goes on to go back to the pasuk in the malbum. I'm in pasuk yudalid. Let's go to the three lines from the bottom, from the end of the Malbim. Bashevet Asher Yaku Alalechi Eish Shevte Yisrael Shavosem Hiku Eish Shevte Yisrael, their forefathers. So he's learning this, referring to what the enemy did to us. That their forefathers, our enemies, they hit Eish Shevte Yisrael B'Shevet Alalechi Shemakas Halechi Humakas B'Zayin V'Chimakas Hashevet V'Chol Shekein Im Makim B'Shevet Alalechi. So he says two things which we did not learn before. We learned before that hitting someone on the cheek, that's a disgrace. But also hitting someone with a stick. Okay, we don't know the culture. It's hard for us to appreciate the culture, but hitting someone with a stick is disgraceful. It's not so much the pain. With the stick, it's a disgraceful. Remember when someone threw their shoes at Bush? Okay, so throwing your shoes in America, all right, you know, you throw your shoes at someone. All right, so big deal. What else is new? But in the Arab world, when you throw your shoes at someone, that's a big news. Okay, it's a different culture. It's a big news. So we don't appreciate the culture. Hitting someone with a stick is considered to be very disgraceful. So these descendants of these people, they will be assembled and the Jewish people will come and will take revenge against them. Okay, now before we go further, maybe we'll do two more things. We'll wind down with that. Let's first look at the Perish Harid on the page 492. It's very interesting what he says over here. Kumi v'doishi. Okay, kumi v'doishi oysam basiyon v'hacharamti l'Hashem bitzam. Okay, we spent a lot of time discussing this idea of cherem. We gave many examples in the time throughout Tanakh of of what happens to the money, the spoils of war, with Avraham Avinu in Michut V'Yatzurei Chnal, Yerichoi, probably the most famous story where no one was allowed to take from the spoils, and Ochan could not help himself, and that brought about a terrible tragedy, and other Milchemes Midian, we spent a lot of time discussing this, and here he writes, what will happen to this money? Shekol Mamoinam Higdishu Lashamayim Lehisparnes Mimenu Loimde Torah. How did he know this? Where did he get this from the Rit? Okay, the Rit, you can't just make this up. You have to have a tradition to say this. The money will be dedicated to people that will spend their time learning Torah. Shekol Doiroi. Now, what's his proof? The proof is because he understands this pasuk, obviously, current events. Micha is living in the time of Chizkiah. And Chazal tell us, in the time of Chizkiah, there was a ribui in the study of Torah. And in fact, Chazal make it very clear, clear as day, the only reason why they were spared, they survived, was in the Shamnoi Shel Chizkiah. They burnt the midnight oil. They spent their days and nights studying Torah, and in that schus, they were spared from Ashur destroying Yerushalayim. There are many psukim. And Chizkiah was a very powerful time in Jewish history where the psukim and Chazal emphasize that there was a very great ribui in the study of Torah and a very great appreciation in the study of Torah. You don't have this about any other generation in Tanakh. Okay, Baruch Hashem, today we live in a generation where Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of Torah. Okay, there's a lot of learning in Eretz Yisrael in America. It's Baruch Hashem, it's beautiful. But when you study Tanakh, you do not get that impression. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, certainly they were very great Talmidei Chachamim, there's no question about it. They had Ruach HaKodesh, they had Nevuah. But do we find that the emphasis, the focus was nothing else in life counts except for learning a Daf Gemara? You don't get that impression. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, they came to conquer the land, they fought wars, they came to settle the land. You don't find Mamari Chazal telling us about the Bati Midrashim. You don't find that. In the Doro Adea, Moshe Rabbeinu, in the desert, so there they had nothing to do. I mean, even there, you have to find to what degree were they involved in the study of Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu, he taught them for 40 years. They lived a very different type of life. They had mon, they didn't work. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest of the great, the one who brought down Torah to this world. He taught them Torah. But after they came into Eretz Yisrael, when you go through every generation, all the way to the time of the Churban, you don't get that impression that there was a very great emphasis and appreciation of the study of Torah. The exception, the notable exception, is the Dor Shel Chizkiah. Chizkiah HaMelech cherished the study of Torah, and he spread this love of Torah to the entire Klal Yisrael. And therefore the Rid is picking up on this. Okay, I can't quote for you chapter and verse all the Mamari Chazal that tell us this. That was not a baki in Tumah V'Tahara and say the Tahara, that was a Dor Shel Chizkiah. That was Dor Shel Chizkiah. They spent time learning Torah, and that's obviously why the Rid is making this very bold statement. Because to make this statement, you have to have proof. Where do you have proof of this to make such a statement? Obviously, he feels that being that this pasuk is being written in the time of Melech Ashur, when he was exiling the Aseres Hashvatim, and Melech Ashur made his last attempt to conquer Yerushalayim, and Chizkiah successfully, miraculously survived, and Chazal tell us it was only in the zuchus of the study of Torah. That's the mindset of the people. Therefore, it has to be, when it says here, the hacharamti l'Hashem bitzam, the money, the wealth, will be dedicated to Hashem. The mindset is, what else other than putting away money for people to study Torah? When they came into the land in the time of Yehoshua, that wasn't the mindset. What was the mindset?
Conquest.
And what's going to be with Yericho? We're going to destroy Yericho. There's going to be billions and billions of dollars. And what are we going to do with that money? So it's the same exact word. And what? What's the cheren? It'll go to the Beis HaMikdash, or it'll just be destroyed. No one's going to derive benefit. It's going to be buried in the ground. Or maybe what it means, I don't know what it means over there. It means it'll be given to the Beis HaMikdash for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash to bring korbanos. Wait a minute. Why don't you use that money to open up koilalim? Open up a new koilal. Open up a new shul somewhere. Have a team of Talmidei Chachamim go publish Svarim. What's the answer? That's not the mindset. That was not the mindset of that generation, that when you achieve success and you have extra money, the money is going to go for the study of Torah. That was not the tafkid of that generation. That generation, different goals. It was a different time. It was a different tekufa, a different period of time in Jewish history. But the time of Chizkiah, the goal was to learn Torah. Therefore, against that backdrop and against that mindset, when you have a surplus of funds, where is it going to go? It's going to go into the ground? Is it going to go to the Beis HaMikdash? The Beis HaMikdash, they're doing well. They have enough money in the Beis HaMikdash. You're going to go feed the poor people? They have already enough organizations that are taking care of the poor people. They could use a little bit more. But this, the mindset of the generation is Torah. So it has to be that the money that they're going to achieve from destroying the enemies in this period of time, in time of Chizkiah, is going to go for the study of Torah. Shekol memoinim hikdishu, l'shamayim l'sparnes b'menu loindei Torah. Shekol doiroi shel Chizkiah, he's telling you that's the time of this pasuk. Hayu loindei Torah. That was the generation. Vayu m'sparnesim me'roiv ha'shalol shel Sancheiriv. That is how he was able to support the generation, all of the Koilalim. Unbelievable. And if you want to go take this, and you want to say that this pasuk, according to the other commentators, is also a reference to Yemos HaMashiach, and if you want to preserve the same translation, so we know that we're today living in a generation with, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the highest value by Orthodox Jews is Torah. There's no question about that. And does that mean then that the spoils of war of Milchemes Goig Umagoig will go to create institutions of learning? Jewish education. Very likely. If this is what it means, Pshutei Shel Mikra, in the generation when it was said, because that's what was going on then, and this generation is a direct parallel to that generation. It's interesting what would then be the money that would be gained from Milchemes Goig Umagoig, what will it go for? Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're suggesting that in all the wars that they never took spoil, right?
And of course not.
So, right, because I mean, what's the motivation? You know, as they say in action, what's the motivation? If you're not going to have any benefit from it, what's the motivation for taking spoil?
Well, you're not going to take it. Well, that's the question. What does it mean, cherem? Cherem means just don't, like, Avram Avinu. What did he say? I don't want it. Imichut v'yat sereich nal. You keep it. It's not for me. If I'm going to take the money, it's going to show that I have ulterior motives. But then there's times.
But then again, there's payback and there's payback, right?
Well, Yitzias Mitzrayim, we did take spoils because it was ours. We worked for 210 years. We were entitled.
Right.
It was our money, okay. As I'll say.
We took.
We were robbed. Exactly. So throughout history, we have not been robbed. Throughout 2,000 years of Gulf, we have not been robbed.
Of course
we've been robbed. So we're entitled. We're entitled.
Isn't that what we say about the West Bank, that it's ours?
Of course it's ours. Right. Hashem gave it to us. Of course
exactly.
It's ours.
So they claim that we occupy it, but we say it's ours.
The first Rashi, listimatem. You're robbers, you're bandits, you're thieves. Shekivashtam, you've conquered land that's not yours. The answer at the end of the day is it's Hashem's world. Hashem created it. He gave it to you when he wanted. He took it away from you and he gave it to us. That Rashi, the first Rashi in Chumash says, that is the only answer that will that will work. We're living in a world today where we're afraid to say that. Because they don't believe in it. They don't accept that. So we have to work backwards. Well, look, Jewish history. For 2,000 years ago, it was ours. So we're just taking back what we had to what we had 2,000 years ago. So one thing they never say to us is, and how did you get it 2,000 years ago? I've never heard that argument. And how did you get it 2,000 years ago? You also stole it. So let's go back.
That's what
Abbas
says, that they are
right.
Descendants of the Canaanites.
Right. Yeah. Zaka says that. That's total nonsense. The lies get bigger and bigger. The lies get greater and greater. But the end of the day is, you have to acknowledge that there is a creator. This is the first Rashi in Chumash. There is a creator. And once that has been established, and it says in the Bible, Lech lecha me'artzecha me'molatecha el ha'aretz asher areka, it's all over for them. The problem is, they don't believe there is a creator. They don't believe in the Bible. So if they don't believe there's a Bible, but they don't believe in this, even those who believe don't believe in this.
So they say it's
Yishmael. Right, so they don't believe. They're corrupt. They'll corrupt everything. They'll
don't want to see the best article I ever remember after the Six-Day War was a columnist in the New York Post, Max Lerner. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an article a little while after the war that Israel should, yes, they should give back the land the day after the United States returns Texas to Mexico.
Right.
He said we wouldn't give them 10 feet.
Only Texas? What about everything else?
Well, actually, the whole Southwest was Mexico. No, there were six states that were part of Mexico. Mexico was a big country.
They won it back.
Okay, so this...
We won the battle.
This is an old...
You know what? I think we should give them back California.
Only here, till Monterey.
All right, it's late, so we'll stop over here. And Yerushalayim, tomorrow we'll do the Likutei Shas. What we'll do now is we'll just spend a little bit of time learning a little halacha, and then we'll discuss a little bit about Tzom Gedalia. What exactly is Tzom Gedalia all about?